Up next, I sit down with Jerry Ellsworth. She's the founder and CEO of Tilt 5. Some really cool augmented reality technology talk coming up next on Triangulation.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Triangulation, episode 419, recorded Monday, October 21st for Friday, October 25th, 2019. Jerry Ellsworth, Tilt 5. It's time for Triangulation. I'm Jason Howell, and this is the show where we talk with people who are doing amazing things in the world of technology. I'm so happy to be here. A few years back, when we were at the Brickhouse studio, I was in the studio when Leo was interviewing today's guest, Jerry Ellsworth. It's so great to have you here, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I was just saying that, you know, when I was in the studio for that interview, you came in with this kit. It was Cast AR. This is it. What is the episode number on that? I can't see it. It's 124. So if people want to go back in time to 2013, you can. Episode 124. You and Rick Johnson were here to show off Cast AR. And I felt fortunate to be in the studio on that day because I actually got to play around with the kit that you brought in. So I have at least a little bit of perspective of then to hopefully now, hopefully at some point I'll have the opportunity to play around with Tilt 5 because it looks really cool.
Holy cow. I think I had pneumonia that day too.
Really?
That might've been the first day we had launched a Kickstarter and, we were just going around all of the podcasts here in the Bay Area and I was so sick and I was just pretending to be happy.
That is the worst. That is the worst, having to be on when you're sick like that. Well, I had no idea. I'm sure no one else had any idea.
You probably got sick. I'm sorry.
Who the heck knows? It's entirely possible. But you know what? Cast AR was cool enough. It was worth it. So right there. So you are not here for Cast AR today. You're here, because you do such cool things in the world of augmented reality and by extension, all the other realities out there, virtual reality, mixed reality, all those lines are kind of intertwining right now. And Tilt 5 is the product that you're working on right now and that you actually have a Kickstarter for. And it's just super exciting. Right off the top, would you say this is specifically made for tabletop gamers, or is that just a really great kind of initial use case to lock onto to show the benefits and the potential of this hardware, would you say?
Well, you know, when things went sideways with Cast AR, a group of us came back together and we were like, all right, we made a bunch of mistakes, things went wrong, we want to do it right this time. So instead of just coming out and doing technology for technology's sake, we're like, we have to find a segment that really would appreciate what we're doing within all the limitations and functions that we can provide. And so we looked at a bunch of different segments, like, hey, we could do pure video gaming on our system. It's great for that. Or we could do education. And as we started to analyze all these different markets, like, okay, pure video gaming. Oh, well, we're not going to be able to go up against Microsoft and Sony putting billions of dollars in marketing, even though it is a $450 billion market. Like, even if we could capture a small piece of it, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But the players are just too big for a little company like us. Education or military simulation or any of these other things, like, well, I don't know how to, like, sell into education. I hear the sales cycle is really long, and it's like, let's go to some place that, you know, as you can see behind me, I'm a big gamer. So, like, we know the space. My co-founder's a DM. We're like, it's $7 billion market. It's not the biggest market in the world, but there's not a lot of innovation there as far as technology, and we can bring that to that first segment. But as we tell, like, the hundreds and hundreds of people that have been writing us in the last few weeks, like, hey, can I use it for medical visualization? It's like, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Just all of our marketing dollars are going into, you know, tabletop games because it makes so much sense.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a really nice kind of overlapping Venn diagram of tabletop gamers and people who are interested in new technology. And the crossing there where the idea of a tabletop game has so much potential for being infused with crazy technology and kind of in some ways, tabletop gaming can be looked at and seen as like a relic of a bygone era. Unless you're like really into tabletop gaming, and you realize that's an absolutely false statement.
Yeah, yeah, it is so hot right now. We couldn't have picked a better market to go after. It's just exploding right now. Every year, it's almost doubling in size. So
right timing there. And then you've got this kind of evolution of the technology behind, all of these realities. XR, I suppose, would be the blanket term, but augmented reality in the case of Tilt 5. And it just seems like those are two waves that, it's perfect timing for you to combine those. So,
yeah. And, we came up with this thesis of how are we going to operate this first phase of our company? Obviously, we have our eyes on how can we be the XR, MR, blah, blah, blah company of the future, but we can't boil the ocean in one shot. So totally. It's okay, let's take the things that everyone loves about video games and the things people love about board games and marry those together into one tight package that, gives you the benefits of both. If you're a tabletop gamer, one of the biggest struggles you have is getting your friends to come over. So with our tech, you can link game boards together over long distances and play with people when they can't come over to your house.
Love it.
Or if you're a board gamer, but you're just accustomed to all the luxuries of video games, setup usually takes a long time and learning the rules takes a long time. You're just accustomed to just saving your game whenever you want or learning the rules through tutorials, and we can provide all of that. And so we went out and we found all these partners that have digital tabletop games and deliver thousands of experiences to our system.
Fantastic.
With tutorials and adventure packs.
Kind of, and a good way to kind of kickstart for users who use it for the first time and get introduced to the concepts. And, you've got the wand as a control surface or as a control mechanism, but the wand isn't the only way to interact, right?
No, since the Cast AR days, we've improved on the technology. We have the wand. It's 6 degrees of freedom, lets you, reach in and poke things. Mm-hmm. Everyone makes fun of our wand because it looks like a barbecue lighter. that's not a mistake. We're not stupid. Everyone knows how to poke things with a stick.
Totally.
Everyone knows how to pull a trigger on a hot glue gun or a barbecue lighter. And we put up buttons and joysticks so you can use it for video game type things. But we also have input to the system through cameras, which are on the headset. So we have two cameras. One of them is a high-speed tracking camera that tracks where you are in the world and tracks the wand. The other camera is super high resolution, and it's on a different wavelength of infrared light that tracks your hands. It tracks playing cards. It tracks miniatures, so you can start blending your real-world objects. So if you're a traditional board game player and you want to have your, Dragon Mini on the table, you can have it and we can track its position, but we can have it breathing virtual fire, right? So get the best of both worlds.
And then based on those cameras and based on your perspective in space, it's going to know where the mouth on that dragon is and where to kind of position the fire and at what angle. So there's not that detached state where it's it's close, but not quite perfect.
That's really unique about our system is our optical system uses the game board as part of the optics. Right. And so no one else is doing that. But what that provides is the ability to have objects in focus. So when I have my little dragon here and it's breathing fire, those pixels coming out of its mouth are in focus. And all these other systems are fixed focus. And so you have this disconnect between the virtual objects you're trying to wrap your physical objects with, and it just doesn't look right. And so with ours, because the photons are actually going out to the game board and back again, it looks correct.
That's really awesome. Engineer here in the studio, John, just dropped off a little relic from the past.
Look at that.
Does that look familiar?
Yep.
The Commodore 64 in a joystick. I will go ahead and admit. Oh, what's that?
That put me on the map back in 2003, I think.
Fantastic. And I just have to say, you're speaking to my soul here. This is the Commodore 64 was the computer that I grew up on. I have very, very fond memories of this machine.
Me too.
And getting into trouble with this machine. But that's for another story.
Put that thing on eBay. Put it on eBay. They're selling for a bunch.
Seriously?
Yeah, back when they were producing these toys, they gave me an option like, oh, you can buy them for $9 a piece or something like that. I'm like, nah, I don't want to buy a bunch of them now. If I had them, I'd be wealthy.
First of all, we would never sell this, so that's not going to happen. But so, yeah, I don't know that there is a second of all. We would not sell this. This is too cool. Along the lines of this, so this basically for audio listeners, your first project was like a bunch. Well, it says here 30 Commodore 64 games embedded into a joystick. So it's kind of like a plug and go sort of thing. What do you think of the latest kind of offering in this field? There's a Commodore 64 Mini, you know, hopping on the mini train that we're seeing of these consoles. Like, I was a little disappointed that the keyboard wasn't actually functional. I think, how do you produce anything Commodore 64 with a keyboard that looks exactly like it, but make it non-functional?
I know. I was disappointed too. I got excited when I first saw it. I'm like, oh, and yes, it has a little mini keyboard. Like, it probably would have sold 40 times more of them if they would have put a functional keyboard on it. But maybe their Gen 2 product, they'll do that.
I think I've read that's in their plans, that they're going to release one and have a functional keyboard.
I'd buy that.
Because it doesn't make sense to have that and then plug in like your own keyboard in order. Like, what the heck is that?
I have to be like, I guess I'm turning into an old fart or something, but you know, back in my day, we had to roll custom ASICs to do it. But now you can just get a Raspberry Pi or equivalent ARM processor and emulate the Commodore. But, you know, back in 2003, it was really difficult to emulate the Commodore 64. It would be almost like, I guess, the equivalent if someone made a Dreamcast or, you know, the original Xbox and a joystick.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not fair. Yeah. Something like that,
somewhere along those lines. Those setups. I know that we're so off topic right now, but I love these topics. I know that the Sega Saturn is apparently really difficult to emulate. So maybe something like that.
That's the equivalent. Yeah.
Maybe something like that. Anyways, I'm happy that John remembered that we had this here, because I just look at this thing and I love it. It's got that feel. Oh, it's so great. I'm going to set this down. Otherwise, I'm going to want to play, plug it in and play Winter Games or something. Let's peel back a little bit. So CastAR was why you were here initially. I would say, looking at CastAR through the lens of time, at that point there was such energy around VR and AR that seemed like the right time for the technology. Why? At what point did things change for CastAR? What happened there?
So maybe I should back up just like a year prior to that or 2 years prior to that. So I was hired into Valve Software to help them put together their hardware R&D department. And so we put this dream team together just to figure out how to make games more fun and how to bring the family together on the Steam platform, which is Valve's content distribution platform. And we did a ton of fundamental research for years and years before the Oculus and before the HTC Vive. And we just brute forced AR, VR. We were reading people's minds with electrodes and looking at their pupil dilation. And I like to say I got to see 20 years into the future there just through pure brute force. And like, that's where I got hooked on augmented reality. I'm like, this is the platform of the future. I have no clue how long it's going to take for us to get there, where the Minority Report style, like walking around the world, just kind of waving your hands and having your compute just with you, blended into the world, is going to happen. But, you know, Valve and I parted ways. They didn't want to do AR. They wanted to like double down on virtual reality, and they cut the whole AR team. So a group of us that left, got pushed out of Valve, actually went back to Valve and bought some of these optical techniques from them and got, you know, free and clear access to that to develop CastAR. And so back in those days, you know, we weren't as savvy about marketing. We were just a bunch of engineers, like, we're going to do this thing for technology's sake. And we just turned on a Kickstarter after showing a couple prototypes of what we could do. And we did okay. We raised $1 million and there was a lot of excitement. But the whole industry was like a buzz at that point with VR technology. And there wasn't a lot of thought going into making a completely bundled system. Like you mentioned before we started the show, that you got the Quest. Like the Quest is a great bundling of, you know, all of the compute and all the games and everything in just one little tight package, so you can do VR.
Right.
We weren't thinking about that. No one was thinking about that. And so we took off and we were mostly focused, but we weren't as highly focused as today. We shipped out some of our first units on the Kickstarter, like 200 to 300 of them went out the door. We moved to Silicon Valley and got wrapped up in the Silicon Valley startup culture down here, raised some money from some angel investors, and then built our team out, got a really nice team put together. And then we took money from one of the bigger venture capital guys down here. And that's when things kind of went off the rails for us. So they had totally different ideas for where we should go with our products. So they're like, quit messing around with shipping those Kickstarter products, you know, and start focusing on what we want you to focus on. And I'm pretty proud. Like, we hadn't shipped out all of our units for Kickstarter, but I insisted on at the time that we refund 100% of our Kickstarter backers' money, even people that had received units. And I'm pretty sure our investors, you know, would have been fine if we would have just like ignored them. But
yeah,
but we didn't. And we got sent off this different path. And they started replacing our leaders in the company. They started bringing their buddies in. And then the company, like, they wanted to fluff it up really big, make it huge. We went from, like, 20 people to 90 people overnight. And just these executives came in, just burned through the money. And next thing we know, we were just out of money, and we had to shut down. And so the core team is just kind of looking around, like, what just happened? Like, we had such a magical thing and it was just yanked out from underneath us. And so a group of us came together and we're like, well, that was screwed up. How can we like buy back the assets? I found out we could buy the assets back. It was actually Nolan Bushnell who called me the day after Cast AR had to suddenly shut down and say like, hey, Jerry, you know, I've been around enough companies that I've messed up. And I think that's how he put it. He's like, I know. Yes. I could see this coming a mile away. Like, as soon as the Disney execs came in, you were in trouble.
Oh, no.
And he's like, but just remember one thing, there's always a way. And so, you know, a couple of days went by and I started thinking about asking people and found out I could buy the assets. And so I called up a bunch of the core team. I'm like, hey, we could buy the assets and we could like do it the right way this time. And so we bought the core technology and that was about 2 years ago, and we've been heads down, like refining the product and making sure that we're really, really clear on how we're going to market it and how we're going to bundle it with software and do it right this time and not make those same mistakes. And which is interesting. In the last 2 years, I had opportunities to take different venture capital money, and you know, along the way, I've learned like some of the code words, like, we'll give you money, but we need adult supervision in the room. And we'll give you the money if you have adult supervision. And like, I know what that means.
Yeah, I know
that
what
means. So we actually had to walk away from money along the way. And we've been very careful about who we're taking money from. And we're very careful about what market we go after.
Yeah, and I imagine, you know, and you hear, you know, people who have created and been successful entrepreneurs, you know, say it a lot, like, you fail multiple times before you win. And really, it's the price of the education, right? Like, I'm sure at the time, it really sucked to have Cast AR be this really great thing that you held close to your heart and you saw a long future with, and suddenly it just fizzles up and shrivels up. You get to that point, man, that's got to feel like a defeat. But, you know, that's not how life works. Thankfully, you were able to kind of take those lessons and the IP, which is amazing that you were able to do that and turn it into something like Tilt 5. And you've learned those lessons, and that's the price of learning.
There was a picture of someone, like, after the company shut down, the very same day the company shut down, like, kind of the core people, the core 20 people or so that had been there the longest. We all went out for drinks. Someone snapped a picture and sent it to me, like, a couple months ago, and I'm crying. And it took me right back to those emotions of, like, being robbed of this opportunity. And, yeah, I can't tell you how agonizing it was and how I felt like, because I'd got stripped. You know, I was completely stripped of any power in the company. I was just told to sit in the corner for the last year of its operation. Oh. But I felt, even though all that stuff had happened, I felt that I'd let, you know, like, all my employees down.
Yeah.
and let my you know, the fans of what we were doing down. And so it was agonizing.
Man, and what
pressure.
I'm starting
to get choked up now thinking about it.
I feel it, man. I can't imagine being in that position and watching it crumble.
But that's how Silicon Valley is, though.
Absolutely.
You know, it's probably a foreign concept to some of your listeners that come from, you know, other places, but entrepreneurs down here really rally behind you. And when the poop hit the fan, I had tons of people like Nolan Bushnell and just people reaching out to me like, oh, it's happened to me a dozen times. It's okay. You know, that's just how it works down here. You know, if it would have worked out, like if the VC's plans of like fluffing us up and making us really big worked, I would be here on Triangulation saying like, I'm a genius. I got sold Apple and now we're the Apple Glass and I'm a genius. Like, but instead I have to like eat some humble pie and say like, well, yeah, we screwed that up bad and we learned from it and we're going to do better.
And I would say the majority of entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, have to eat that humble pie at some point. This is part of the game. So I'm so happy that you were able to transition from something that could have been disastrous. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people that would be faced with that and be like, well, I guess that isn't going to work. I'm done. But you were able to transition into something that has a lot of steam around it now. And not only from a business perspective, you could take those lessons, but also from a technological perspective. Obviously, you ended up with the IP. But I have to imagine, and based on what I've seen through the Kickstarter, you know, the technology that's driving this, it's that, but better. You know, it's better in all facets because you have more time, because you had the ability to expand and improve upon these initial ideas and see it through to a new place. I have to ask, what is behind the name? What is Tilt 5?
I can't tell you, unfortunately.
Dang it. I was hoping I could get you to tell me.
I can't tell you. No one's ever going to know except for the core team, I guess.
Oh, dang.
Maybe some insiders. And if they leak it, they're dead to us.
If they leak it, you know who did it. It's a great name, though, by the way. I love it.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Yeah. It's kind of silly and it's fun. At Cast AR, no one was really happy with the name. And the new execs came through and they're like, we hate the name so much. And they're like, we're going to rename you, rebrand you. And they spent like $750,000 on rebranding exercises. And they came up with absolutely what we thought was a terrible name. They were going to call the product Voyage AR. But when you read it, it read Voyagar.
Voyagar.
So immediately the team started making parody videos like Voyagar the Warrior.
Yes, it sounds like a warrior's name. Exactly. Voyagar.
And they were going to, actually, I won't say the name because we might actually use it. The name wasn't horrible for the company, but, you know, they came up with a different name for the company. But we're like, wow, when we do it this next time, we're going to come up with a name. It's super generic. It's an inside joke to us. It makes us laugh every single day. And if we become like the network router company 10 years from now, it doesn't have AR in the name, you know.
Exactly. It gives you the freedom to expand to wherever the technology might go. And you know, your business priorities and everything gives you the freedom to, and that's a really good point. You lock yourself into a very narrow field when you put AR into that. Everything you do.
We actually see that. Like some of our, like there's people we talk to that got their start with VR. So they have VR in their name, but they were like, now they're having to wave their hands a bunch. Like we're more than VR. Right. We're AR, XR, MR.
Yep. Yep. And whatever other realities tend to bubble up to the surface. So
that was the nature of things back then. I mean, we were, when we did our Cast AR Kickstarter, like Oculus had just came off of their Kickstarter and they just got acquired for billions of dollars. And like investors were just throwing money out like it was crazy. Like VR and AR is going to be the future tomorrow.
Yep.
And well, all the disappointment has come and is starting to go now. We've gone to that trough of disillusionment now.
Yeah.
This, and now we're like starting to do the slow pull out of this kind of crash of the VR AR market, and the tides have pulled back, and now like the real companies with real utility can surface and start making a bunch of money.
Absolutely. Now there's a little bit more balanced view, I would say, of what the technology is capable of, maybe what the long term is. But I think there's a sobriety going on in the industry right now, and that's a good thing.
It's a real good thing. Yeah. I mean, I think at early stage, a lot of investment can go into these startups and they can be flipped really quick to big companies. There can be a lot of money made. But we're kind of past that now. Companies that are surviving actually have to provide a lot of utility to the end user.
Sure. Yeah. Now, one of the things that is very challenging in this industry, and I'm sure, I'm curious to hear your take on it, is how you effectively market something that is so intrinsically linked to what we see through our own perception. Like, it's one thing to show a video game screenshot and be like, this is what the experience is like. But as you know, with augmented reality, that often is nowhere near the actual reality of what you see as a user. That's a huge challenge, right? For taking this sort of thing and going mainstream. What are your thoughts on that? I thought the video that you produced did a really great job of kind of giving an idea of what people might see. I think though it can be easy for someone watching something to go that's going to look worse in reality. This is like a rosy, rosy outlook on the technology. But I don't know, what are the challenges there and how do you balance that?
Oh, it's extremely difficult to express. Even with the best, we did computer CGI in our video to try to express what it's like. And you can only capture half the experience at best.
Yeah.
And we knew doing CGI, we were going to take a lot of flack for that as well. And sure enough, as soon as we launched our Kickstarter, the haters came out and they're like, that's CGI. But we had almost shot for shot, we had shot everything through the lens of the glasses as well.
Yeah.
So that people could see that, yeah, it does look, pretty much what we're showing in the video. And in fact, when you jam a camera behind the lens of our glasses, it's really hard to even capture the way the projectors blink and everything mm-hmm. to even express it shooting through the lenses. But yeah, we were able to convince people that what we were showing in the video is more or less what they were going to see. And of course, they called us out on everything. We have a game board, the optics is part of the game board, and things don't extend above the top of the game board at the very furthest end of the game board. So there's certain things you can't see, but we had to cheat those a little bit in the video. Mm-hmm. But we had to try to express it the best we could to sell the experience. I think we did better than the video game industry. I mean, honestly, I look at video game trailers and they'll have cinematics.
Oh yeah. The entire time.
Yeah. They'll have a top-down God mode type game and they'll have first-person cinematics for the 100% of the video. And I have no clue what the game is like.
That's true.
So I think you have
an idea of the story. Well. That's about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. So let's talk a little bit about these glasses. I think this is another challenge in the industry right now is in order to do augmented reality in the ways that we're, by the way, they look fantastic on you.
Thanks.
Oh, and they look awesome like that too. That's great. In this world of, this emerging field of augmented reality, for better or for worse, we jump to this, or at least I can speak for myself. I jump to this idea of when are we going to be a Terminator view? When are we going to be down the line to where everywhere I look, it's just augmented and maybe it's built into my glasses that are just my glasses, instead of being a specialized type of glasses that you have to retrofit or whatever. So you have to make choices around the design of glasses. You guys definitely took a different approach with the design of these glasses and how it works with the technology. So talk a little bit about your thinking there as far as the design of the glasses themselves.
Well, as I said earlier, I've been in this space for quite some time, and I've seen there's always a boogeyman around the corner that's going to come get you, and that's what everyone's afraid of. When I was at Valve, Google Glass came out while we were there and people were running around like, the sky is falling. Google's figured out how to make the ultimate immersive display in Google Glass.
Boy.
And I'm like, no.
No.
There's No, I actually like the Google Glass product. I think it was positioned in the market in an unfortunate way.
Yeah, I have one in the other room. So I definitely have plenty of pictures of me wearing Google Glass. So that happened.
But the problem was there's laws of physics you have to deal with. And there's cost. You have to deal with this. And then there's physical form factor you have to deal with. And unfortunately, there's no perfect solution that's like the silver bullet that's going to give us the Terminator glasses that are just perfect and totally immersive, because photons go where photons want to go. And, you know, things just haven't been miniaturized yet.
Yeah.
And so everyone, like every single year, there's this like scare of like, oh, I heard Apple's coming out with their super immersive AR glasses. Like, no, they're not. No, they're not. Like, are they somehow like putting a black hole in their optical system to bend light like faster than anyone else? But yeah, maybe if anyone could, it would be Apple.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, even clear back to the Valve days, like Google Glass came out. We ran off to the optics lab and a couple of us put a Google Glass like, you know, mock up together that actually worked. In like a couple of days, and we ran around like, this is what it's going to be like. And even after we showed people what it's going to be like, they're like, you know, no, they figured out how to make it work better. Like, no. But anyway, so around our product, the thought we put into it is we had several dimensions. It had to be super lightweight. It had to be glasses. So for your video viewers, saw, I just slipped the glasses on. So you fold the arms out, slip them on. They're 85 grams. You know, anyone knows how to put them on because they're just glasses. You're not ratcheting things to your head. They have multiple nose pieces depending on your face shape. They have, we actually made them bigger so that you could fit your eyewear behind them. So if you have prescription glasses, you can change the nose pieces around in different ways to make them work well with your eyewear. We went with a white color for first. We did a lot of, so funny, everyone thinks that we're like fools for doing things, but it's like we put, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of research into like, what's the best shape, what's the best color, what's the ergonomics need to be. Like, we made them white because it's the least polarizing of any color out there.
Totally.
So they'll be approachable by grandma, grandpa, the grandkids, women, men. And they kind of look like Elton John glasses. They're cool.
That's I'm happy you said that. That's kind of where my mind went as well.
But we just made it proud. We, you know, there's certain things we couldn't shrink the electronics infinitely small. So it was like, okay, we'll just make parts of it proud. We wanted to make sure that full telephony was built in so you could speak with your friends over long distances. So it has speakers and microphone built into it that don't cover your ears. So you can sit around the table with your friends and talk to them and talk to your friends remotely. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the various tracking schemes, you know, we've set that up so that it works really good for telepresence. Like, you can track your hand and you can be talking to people and they can see your hands moving through this virtual space, because we really want it to feel comfortable and like you're together instead of being isolated from the world. I mean, the biggest thing for me is like, I want to see my beer and pizza when I'm, you know, playing my games. So like VR was out. That's why, right. I've never been a fan of VR. Cause I'm a gamer. I'm a social gamer. Who even put pizza in our video to emphasize that. They wouldn't let me put beer in though.
It is pizza compatible.
It is pizza compatible.
And it does the trick. Now one thing that is different here, and by the way, this is definitely a step up from the Cast AR headset that I saw in person, but, you know, that was definitely much more of a prototype. This is obviously a very finished product here. This is basically, well, probably better for you to describe the technology here, but it's basically projecting down from your eyes onto this reflective surface. How does that work so that everybody gets their own view and all that stuff?
Yeah, let me get all science-y on it.
Great.
So we have two HD projectors that are 110-degree field of view, so it fills the entire table with an image. And then we have two lenses in front of your eyes, and we actually have patents on this. Those lenses are super efficient. We get 85% of the light that strikes those lenses to go out and then return back to the user's eyes. So it goes out to the game board, The game board has this retroreflective material. It takes all the light that strikes it and returns it back in the same direction. So that means that each user around the table gets their own unique view into this 3D space, because light emitted from their glasses are going back to each user. And this has a bunch of virtues that are much different than other types of AR systems that have fixed focus. I touched on it earlier. Because we have this projection system and because we can stop down the aperture on the projector, everything is in focus over the entire range. So if you jam your face into the game board, it's in focus. If you're leaning way back, like a couple meters away, it's in focus. So that does something that no one else can do. And our field of view just is absolutely crushes everyone else as far as field of view. The limit is you need to use our game board, which is a nice trade-off. You know, we're able to reduce the cost. Like, our base kit is $299. Like, we're a fraction the cost of anyone else and four times the field of view of anyone else. And we've also done some unique things with our tracking system. Way back when I worked at Valve, I'm like, this is going to be the future of tracking. It's going to be completely done in the headset. The images are going to be decoupled from the game engine coming off your PC or your phone. And then all the image stabilization is going to happen in the headset. So we actually take images over USB. So it needs to be USB super speed or USB-C. So the blue port or USB-C.
Right.
And send the picture comes up from the game engine into the headset. And then it gets upscaled to 180 frames per second. And then there's a tight loop inside the headset for tracking. So as you move around, it's updating at 180 frames per second and the image is stabilized and locked to the game board. So one of my favorite demos to show off like this innovation that we've done is that I'll actually have someone looking at the game board and I'll secretly turn off the game engine, let them sit there for 4 or 5 seconds and be like, you notice anything? And they're like, no. Like, oh, well, for the last 4 or 5 seconds, you haven't had any new images sent up to the headset. It's the headset's been doing all the tracking and keeping the image placed on the game board. And
oh, wow.
So that makes it so flexible that we can run multiple headsets off one PC or one headset off of a pretty modest cell phone that has a USB-C connection.
Right.
And you don't have to, not like VR where you have to have these brute force systems, big macho beefy PCs that can maintain really high frame rate, because, you know, we can tolerate 30 frames per second, 60 frames per second, whatever your PC can do.
That's awesome. And so if you're doing multiplayer, it's all plugging into the same machine, so like a phone connection, that would be exclusive to like a single player experience. Is that right?
No, I mean, it's network gaming. So
okay, so you could have like three headsets at the same table, all with their own phone.
So some of our third-party content providers are cross-platform, so you can run the game on PC or you can run it on the phone. And so you can have any combination of multiple headsets on one PC, and you just run multiple instances of the game, and it does normal networking to synchronize the game. And then if it's cross-platform, for instance, that can run on phone as well, then you can some of your players could plug into a phone and then it's synchronized over network. And there's nothing special about network gaming. So there's it's just part of all these game engines.
Right, right. Now, you have also mentioned that every one of these kits is essentially a developer a developer kit, a dev tool kit. I'm sure you've heard from a lot of developers on this. Like, what kind of relationships have you built? What are you hearing from developers as far as kind of their ideas for using this and getting started?
Developers are stoked, and that makes me really happy.
Yes.
We were kind of in stealth mode for quite a long time, and we had to like secretly go out to developers, and we had to like get certain developers on board for the Kickstarter. So we got Fantasy Grounds and Tabletopia on board for the Kickstarter, which is super exciting that they bring like thousands of tabletop and licensed D&D content to our system. Then a bunch of these different developers we talked to And as the way it goes in the game industry, they'll never announce on your time scale. They'll only do it on their time scale. Like, they've got to get the software ready. They got to be confident in it. Like, we have a ton of stuff cooking in the background that's just going to be popping, you know, throughout the next 6 to 8 months. And then the Kickstarter, when we finally could like show the world, we went out to all these events and boom, we're just flooded with developer interest. So that's exciting. So we're going to have a really deep pipeline of content for the system, which is I'm really excited about. And we've taken this really strategic approach, like way different than Cast AR. We were just like, hey, we're just going to fling this piece of technology out. We were actually like actively making sure our content pipeline is completely full. So super excited about that. And we also felt like we looked across the industry and it's like, why are all of the other AR companies being so selective about letting people develop for their system or even charging extra money to be part of their developer program? It's like, it doesn't cost us anything to make every one of the headsets also a developer kit. So for free, when you back our project, you get the glasses, you get the wand, you get the game board, you get some games, some packed in games, and then you get the SDK. And so if you want to tinker or you're a professional, you can just go and do it.
That's amazing. I love it. So obviously you're doing something right. The Kickstarter funded fully within 17 hours of its launch. So that must have felt really good. I'm sure that wasn't nice. A surprise, right? Like based on the attention and energy behind Cast AR and leading up to Tilt 5, like were you surprised that that it happened so quickly?
No. We made sure that we took care of the Cast AR folks.
Yeah, you did it.
And so
really
a lot of the Cast AR folks just came right back over, which I'm very thankful for them. But we crafted this in advance. We wanted to make sure that we had good momentum going into the Kickstarter. So we went to a bunch of events and we actually showed production hardware to thousands of people, Gen Con, Penny Arcade, XOXO, just prior to the Kickstarter. And so that helped too. Like, it legitimized what we were doing. What's really great is, like, you know, having gotten beaten up and gotten black eyes from Cast AR, we're like, okay, we got to make sure this thing is production ready before we pull a trigger on any kind of like marketing campaign or Kickstarter. I mean, I wasn't too enthused about doing Kickstarter at first. after the first Kickstarter, I was like, I'm never going to do one of those again because it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
And yeah, I mean, you have this, it's really hands-on with the fans. And, you know, my co-founders were like, no, we should do a Kickstarter. We should do a Kickstarter. I'm like, no, not a Kickstarter, not a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And then it started to make sense. Like, board games are insanely popular there. So our audience was there. And to be successful, we need to have a fan base. We need to have a community that's really like tight-knit, because if we just like launch this into the world without that community, and if they're not going to be there to like help us debug it and be friendly when things go wrong, it'd be a lot harder for us. So yeah, my co-founders convinced me that was the right move. And so we started months in advance to make sure that we did it right. And so we're really happy with the momentum we've got. you have to sell a mountain of hardware to make a nickel. So, I mean, we're kind of at the break even point. Like, we set our goal, like, okay, we're not going to like, you know, lose money at this level. And if we're here, right, we're going to make like a teeny bit. And so, yeah, we'd love to see, you know, more people joining the community and backing us and just more people to play with and more developers.
Absolutely. And then of course the hope there is that, you know, maybe you break even launching this product, but you get it in enough people's hands that raises the energy around the product. And I envision at some point this is just publicly accessible or publicly available for people to then get on board. Like, it actually in some ways reminds me of when the Oculus, you know, the original Oculus unit, you know, it, kind of the crowdfunding behind that. Who knows? You could work for Facebook soon, Jerry. No comment.
No, I think I would rather gnaw my arm off first.
All right, then we'll steer clear of that. So we are recording this show in advance. I should specify off top. We're recording.
I love Fridays.
Oh, isn't Friday great? Friday is the most day. It's definitely better than that Monday day.
Mondays are terrible.
However, on Monday, when we're recording this, there's 7 days to go in the Kickstarter. Right now at $1.4 million pledged on a $450,000 goal. So let's just say, oh, whoa, it just like totally jumped up. Good job. I saw that in real time. So congratulations. This sucker's getting made. By the time that this episode goes live, there will be 3 days left in the Kickstarter. So definitely, you know, what is the intro like level if people wanted to get in and back before this closes? $300 basically, right?
$300. Like I said earlier, you get everything you need. So you get kind of the square game board with that one. You get the glasses, you get the wand, you get some introductory games. Then we have a slightly higher level, which gives you a little bit more deluxe stuff, like a carrying case, a rectangular kind of battle map board with a cool feature where you can tip it up and you can have a lot of extra vertical height things popping up out of the game board. And then we have a group pack, so three units. A lot of people ask us, why don't you have a two pack? And it's like, weird things with logistics, like it costs us like actually more to have like the logistics company pack out another extra two SKUs of products. So we have a three pack. We give a discount on the three pack. And then we have a beta kit level, which is a little bit more expensive, where you get a super early pair of glasses, but don't sign up unless you want to help us track bugs.
So you got to do a little work as well.
Yeah. I'm warning you. Do not sign up if you expect but then after the beta period's over, you get one of the polished up glasses, because we assume there's probably going to be a couple little quirks in the tooling and things that need to be fixed before the June and July shipments.
Sure. That makes sense. Real quick before we move away from this and then back to it right at the very end, what are some other uses for this? Because, I mean, obviously tabletop gaming is a big component of this. But you also mentioned on the site that there are non-games that, you know, there are applications that aren't games that will be coming. And then I know that you were on Ham Nation just a few days ago, and you were talking about some sort of coordination with the ham community. So like what is the vision there for this that doesn't have something to do with gaming?
Well, we knew that we had to put all of our marketing dollars behind tabletop gaming so that it was a very clear message, and that the developers that want to do other stuff with our system would find it anyway. And that's what's happened. Like, we've been flooded with people asking, like, hey, can I use it for education? Like, absolutely. It's perfect for education. You could have kids come around the table and they could participate with like putting molecules together, two, an oxygen and hydrogen make water, and they could dissect a frog. And we actually have partners that are working on those types of science modules, and it's going to be a great education tool. We have people that want to use it for data visualization on the medical or architectural. So we have folks that are working in that space that have approached us. It'd be perfect. You bring your client in, you can look at the building floor plan in 3D, you can use the wand to drag walls around and pull the roof off and look inside. It's just a natural fit. Some of the partners we have on our Kickstarter page are doing some pretty interesting stuff, and they actually, most of those came to us because they were working with our Cast AR kits, and they found out that we were still around, and they continued to develop. So we have Meeting Room that's doing virtual meetings. So they work cross-platform in virtual reality and augmented reality. And so with our system, you have this command and control, and you can drag videos in, and you can share that with people, and you can see people moving through virtual space. Nucleus VR is doing really cool things. They're working with the International European Space Station on the International Space Station. European Space Agency on the International Space Station.
There we go.
gosh,
it's okay. It's Friday. You know, it's been a long week.
I know. I just can't wait for the weekend. But I'm I just worked on a rocket a few years ago, making a navigation system for a low Earth orbit rocket. And so it's super exciting for me to be working with them, because they have astronauts wearing virtual reality systems, walking around a big room as if they're in the International Space Station. And then they use our system as command and control. And so they use our wand as a laser pointer, and they instruct. They see like little miniature versions of the astronauts in VR. And they point to things like, that's the instrument you need to pull out. And they talk to them in real time. And they get this God's eye view for controlling the education process.
That's neat.
Yeah, there's just a slew of those. There's a group that's doing cosplay, on-demand cosplay outfits. So you can design your cosplay on your table, your cosplay outfit, and then they manufacture it for you.
Wow. Yeah, I imagine the setup would be really good for just game, like just designers, like digital designers, period, to have like a new way of having kind of an almost tactile view into the characters that they're creating or whatever.
Yeah. I do my own projects, and that leads to the ham radio stuff. So I develop on my PC wearing the glasses. I'm working in Unity, and I just hit a button. I look over and my 3D model shows up on the table. I'm like, it wasn't rotated correctly. And then I'll go back to the PC and rotate things.
Go.
Yeah. And I'm an amateur radio operator. I have fun building antennas and stuff. And so there's some things that I'm doing just as a side project. Like, I want to make an antenna modeling program so that you can drag the radiators and the directors, these little pieces of the antenna around. And in real time, you can see, you know, how the signal is coming out of your antenna and how it will interact with the terrain around you. And so you could bring in data from Google Maps and put an antenna and then move the elements around and see, it's going to be bouncing off the mountain there, so I need to like put it into a different position. Or the composition of the ground is more iron, so it's going to affect the radiation pattern of the antenna. But that's just my nerdy thing.
I love it.
And I'll make that all open source that people can do whatever they want with it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You can kind of see.
I'm excited. I mean, it's going to be, we saw it in VR. VR is starting to come of age. Like it's got kind of critical mass of people that like to play VR. And all these small time indie developers are now becoming like big developers. Like,
right.
You know, Beat Saber, like it's kind of a rehash of what Konami and a bunch of other games have done in the past, but they now own it in the VR space. Mm-hmm. And like, it's probably the number one game that everyone plays on their Quest. They play 5 minutes of Beat Saber. Yep. They're like, woo.
Yep.
And, but that's going to happen in the AR space. So it's, you know, the big guys are probably going to miss it. And there's going to be new huge companies that come out of AR.
Absolutely. Opportunity right there for you. Well, you're mentioning some of the other kind of players in the industry. So I thought with the few minutes that we have left, we could maybe talk about that a little bit. Of these solutions, like I know a few years ago, it was so shrouded in like secrecy, this Magic Leap thing that we kept hearing had all this money poured into it, but we could never actually see it. And then finally it came out, and I feel like we don't really hear very much about it. But there's that, there's HoloLens, like all of these different approaches. Has there been one of these, I guess it, in some cases they would be competitors, I suppose, but have there been any of these solutions that you've seen and you've been like, okay, they've got it right. Like they're doing something really special.
You know, it's interesting. And so it goes all the way back to Google Glass. Google Glass came out, oversold their product. I thought it was a great product back in the day, mm-hmm. but they sold, I think they showed someone learning guitar on it. And it's like, you can't learn guitar on a Google Glass. Why are you doing that? And they made it a very kind of elitist product, and they weren't very grounded in what they're doing. But, you know, now you look at what they're doing, they've figured out the market to go after. Like, doctors love it. It's a perfect tool for doctors, you know, and now they're positioning it to doctors and they're not getting this backlash like they used to.
Yep.
Microsoft kind of did the same thing. It was disappointing. I've seen it over and over again. They came out with videos of like, you know, you're going to play video games on this $3,500 headset. And I was like pounding my fist on the table when it came out. I'm like, no, you won't.
Meanwhile, the field of view is a postage stamp, you know?
Yeah. It's a fantastic device, though. I love it. I think it's wonderful. But it's great for industrial applications where you're wandering around. You want to see like data for a jet engine or something like really far away from you, because that's all it can do really well is kind of far away experiences. And they've settled into like, you know, industrial and more professional uses for their product. And they've put all of their focus in there. I mean, Magic Leap, sorry, I don't know. I hopefully they'll into place. And I did hear that they're like starting to focus more on medical. I think it could be probably pretty good for that.
I never had the opportunity. We had it in the studio, and I think I was out of town when it was in the studio, so I never had an opportunity to actually wear it after all that buildup. But man, it really seemed like their promise was so great on Magic Leap. I was like, God, I got to check this out. And then it's been kind of radio silence. So I think ultimately it's just really hard.
Honestly,
AR is hard.
It's really hard. You can't break the laws of physics. Yeah. And I kind of knew it was going to end this way. But the unfortunate thing for all the small guys like us is like they hoovered up all of this money out of the VCs, and it made it kind of difficult to raise money. So, you know, hopefully the tides have pulled back, and now the investors that want to invest in kind of the long tail businesses that provide utility to the users will start to pile on, and things will be great for all of us small companies.
Yes.
You know, because we have vision way beyond tabletop games. We don't want to be pigeonholed into that. Like, this product can do a ton of things on the tabletop. But, you know, I've been working in this space for a long time. And, you know, I can see pathways out where we could first start on the table, lift people off the table, get them moving around their home, and then eventually, like a decade or so from now, get people moving around the world with much smaller glasses that do closer to the Minority Report. And every step of the way, you got to provide that value and utility for the user.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say? This might be a hard question to answer right off out of the gate. But what are you most grateful for in your career in the gaming industry? You've had quite a career, and you've done a lot. What's the thing that comes to mind that you're just most grateful for?
Goodness. I think it's the constant learning, constantly learning. So, you know, when I started working at Valve Software, that was an awesome opportunity. We were doing a lot of stuff early, and I got to see into the future. And, you know, one of the things that's really on topic these days is biometrics and what we're going to do with people's data. You know, back when I was at Valve, I was just like, yay, I get to work on really tough, challenging problems. Let's read people's minds and put that data back into games and make games more fun. But over these years, I've learned, and things have changed politically and kind of socially around us. And it's like, wow, you know, I think I'm maybe more mature, you know, going into like Till 5, having got exposed to that and understanding how powerful it is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually pretty frightened about AR in the future if we don't start talking about privacy now, because these glasses in a decade or so are going to be pretty much a like button on your face. They're going to know exactly what you're looking at and whether you like it or you don't. And then that's going to go back to the mothership, whoever that is. And they're either going to do good things with it or bad things with it. And, you know, we spend a lot of time at Tilt 5 talking about, you know, future products. What do we do with biometrics? You know, how much of that do we want to collect, and how much of that, is it a good thing to make games more fun with biometrics? Does it make them too addictive? It's things that people need to talk about. Or is it ethical to read people's emotions on 100% of what they see in the world and then serve them ads? I don't think so.
I don't think
and
so.
And our company is not going to be like doing that.
Wow. That was like an atom bomb right there at the very end. So suddenly it's like,
anyway,
oh, shoot, AR is great, but whoa, here's where it could go. Fascinating stuff.
Because we're going to talk about it. We're all going to talk about it. We're going to think about it, and we're going to head it off before bad stuff happens.
I like that perspective. I share that perspective as well. Jerry Ellsworth, founder, CEO of Tilt 5. Everyone should definitely, you know, as we said, we're recording this on Monday, but we'll pretend like it's Friday. You have 3 days left to get in on the Kickstarter, to get your own Tilt 5 and to support this awesome independent, augmented reality, holographic tabletop. It is really cool stuff. And Jerry, you and your team, you guys are super smart. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day to hang out with me for an hour and talk about this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my honor. It was super fun. Thanks right for letting me cut up with you.
Absolutely. At Jerry Ellsworth on Twitter if you want to follow her there as well. Thank you again. We do this show, usually we do the show every Friday. Again, we're pre-recording this on Monday, but in general, you can usually find this in your podcast feed on Friday as this episode is publishing then. If you want to catch us live, you're welcome to do that. We usually record live every Friday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. But you know, you're probably going to subscribe, and that's what we suggest that you do. So go to twit.tv/TRI. There you will find the show page for Triangulation, all of the interviews that we've done. This would be the 419th interview, and I think we have a couple in there with Jerry, so you can go back into our archives and check out different instances of Jerry's career leading up till today. But that is it for this episode of Triangulation. I love doing this show, so thank you for everyone watching, and thanks again to Jerry Ellsworth for hopping on with me. I'm Jason Howell. We'll see you next week on Triangulation. Bye, everybody.